Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Susan Shand, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Pete Musto.
One morning last autumn, 4-year-old Joey Wilcox did not feel right when he woke up. The boy had lost feeling on the left side of his face. It was the first sign of a much more serious condition. 3 days later, Joey was in a hospital, unable to move his arms or legs or sit up. Tests failed to identify a cause. Doctors feared he might lose the ability to breathe. "It's devastating," his father, Jeremy Wilcox of Virginia, told the Associated Press. "Your healthy child can catch a cold and then become paralyzed." Joey survived, but still suffers some of the effects. He was one of 228 confirmed victims of acute flaccid myelitis, known as AFM, in the United States last year. AFM is a rare, mysterious, and sometimes deadly paralyzing disorder. The number of cases seems to rise and then fall every other year. The condition is beginning to worry public health officials because it is striking more and more children. Anthony Fauci is head of the U.S. government's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He said AFM appears similar to polio, another paralyzing disease. Polio affected only small numbers of people for centuries before it infected larger populations in the 19th and 20th centuries. Fauci prepared a report about AFM that appeared earlier this month in the medical publication MBio.
Fauci said it is unlikely the disease will become as bad as polio, which struck tens of thousands of U.S. children every year before a vaccine became available in the 1950s. Yet he warned, "Don't assume that it's going to stay at a couple of hundred cases every other year." AFM cases have been reported in other countries, including Canada, France, Britain, and Norway. But the size and shape of the U.S. outbreaks seem very different. More than 550 Americans have been struck over the past 10 years. The oldest was 32 years old. More than 90% of the patients were children, most around 4, 5, or 6 years of age. Many had a higher than normal body temperature and what seemed like a common viral infection. They seemed to recover, but then developed paralysis. In some cases, it started in small ways. For example, a finger that suddenly would not move. Some went on to lose the ability to eat or breathe. Many families say their children have regained at least some movement in affected body parts, but stories of complete recovery are unusual. Health officials cannot say how many recovered completely, partly, or not at all, or how many have died. Yet the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, says deaths are rare. Scientists suspect the disorder is being caused mainly by a virus that experts identified more than 55 years ago. They believe the virus may have changed to become more dangerous, but have yet to prove that. Doctors have been using a number of treatments, such as antiviral medications and antibiotics. But CDC officials say there is no clear evidence they work. A growing number of experts agree that physical therapy does make a difference. A leading expert on the condition is Benjamin Greenberg of University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. These kids can continue to recover very slowly, year over year. It's driven by how much therapy they do, he noted.
Joey Wilcox's father said his son made huge improvements that way. Joey can run and use his arms. Still, the muscles in his right leg and shoulder are weak, and he still has left side facial paralysis. Other stories are tragic. Katie Bustamante's son, Alex, developed AFM in 2016. The California woman realized something was wrong when she asked her son, then 5 years old, why he was not eating. Alex said that his thumb had stopped working. That morning was the start of 17 months of hospital stays, operations, therapy, and struggles with healthcare providers to find a way to restore his breathing. It ended one morning last May when Alex died of problems related to the disorder. Government officials need to step up, Bustamante said. I want them to research it and find the cause, and I want them to find a way to prevent it, she said. This is growing. This shouldn't be happening. More and more experts feel strongly that the main cause is an enterovirus called EVD68. Enteroviruses are a large family of viruses, some of which, such as polio, can damage the central nervous system. Many others cause mild problems or none at all.
Researchers have found a link between cases of AFM and a rise in breathing disorders caused by EVD68. In the United States, doctors began reporting breathing conditions tied to EVD68 in 1987. But that was usually no more than about 12 cases in any given year. Then, in what may have been one of the first signs of an AFM outbreak, a 5-year-old boy in New Hampshire died in 2008. First, he developed sensitivity around his neck and a high body temperature, then weakened arms and deadened legs. The boy had EVD68, and researchers linked his death to the virus. The first real outbreak of AFM cases hit in 2014, when 120 were confirmed, with the largest numbers in California and Colorado. Cases dropped to 22 in 2015, jumped to 149 in 2016, and fell again to 35 in 2017. Last year, they reached 228, a number that may grow because many are still being investigated. Just 4 cases have been confirmed in 2019 so far. CDC officials consider a health problem to be AFM based on exams and other evidence showing a special kind of damage to the spinal cord. Proof of an enterovirus infection is not required for a case to be counted, mainly because such evidence has been hard to come by. To date, CDC investigators have been able to find evidence of enteroviruses in the spinal fluid of only 4 of 558 confirmed cases. Scientists are using more powerful spinal fluid tests in hopes of better establishing the connection between AFM and EVD68. That, in turn, could lead to more organized efforts on treatments and maybe even a vaccine. I'm Susan Shand.
And I'm Pete Musto. Researchers say they have found fossil bones and teeth of a previously unknown human species in the northern Philippines. Scientists named the species Homo luzonensis after the island of Luzon, where the discovery was made. Researchers recently reported the finding in a study published in Nature. A team from the Philippines, France, and Australia found the first fossil bones in 2007 in Calo Cave in Cagayan Province. Filipino archaeologist Armand Salvador Mijares led the unearthing effort. He showed off the discovery at a news conference at the University of the Philippines outside Manila. There were 6 pieces of bone from the feet, hands, and leg belonging to at least 3 individuals. 7 teeth were also found. Another Filipino archaeologist, Eusebio Dizon, said the human remains were the oldest ever found in the Philippines. The species is not believed to be a direct ancestor of modern-day humans, but rather a distant, ancient relative. Researchers said tests showed that 2 of the fossil pieces were between 50,000 and 67,000 years old. An examination of the bones led the researchers to decide they belonged to a previously unknown member of the Homo sapiens species. They reported that one of the toe bones and the shapes of the teeth differed from what has been seen in Homo sapiens before. The scientists said the fossils suggest the bodies of the species were likely smaller than modern-day humans. Florent Detroit is with France's National Museum of Natural History in Paris. He co-led the study. He told the French press agency AFP, "From the beginning, we realized the unusual characteristics of these fossils." After much examination, Detroit said the scientific team was able to confirm that this was something special, unlike any previously described species. Matthew Tocheri is with Lakehead University's Department of Anthropology
in Thunder Bay, Canada. He was not part of the study. He told Nature that the bones and teeth create a strong argument that this is something new. The discovery marked the second time in the 21st century that a new human species has been identified in Southeast Asia. In 2004, fossils of another group, called Homo floresiensis, were found on the Indonesian island of Flores. That species, sometimes described as hobbits, was found about 3,000 kilometers from the Lausanne discovery. Detroit said it is not yet clear how Homo lausannensis is related to other species within the Homo family. He said it may have descended from an earlier human relative, Homo erectus. Homo erectus is generally considered the first Homo species to have expanded outside Africa. Some scientists have suggested the hobbits found in Indonesia may have evolved from Homo erectus. Torcheri told the Associated Press he thinks that is possible. But he also said the Philippines discovery may provide evidence of another theory. It is possible, he said, that some unknown creature other than Homo erectus also moved out of Africa and reached Europe and Asia, and that both created new island species. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. A new leader stood before the American people on March 4, 1913. He was Woodrow Wilson, the 28th President of the United States. Wilson belonged to the Democratic Party. He was progressive in his belief that government should take an active part in efforts for social reforms. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe begin the story of Wilson's presidency.
Woodrow Wilson had spent most of his life at Princeton University. First, he was a professor. Then, he was university president. Next, Wilson was elected governor of the state of New Jersey. His early success as governor made him a leading candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1912. Wilson traveled widely around the country during the campaign. He made speeches to many groups. He tried to make himself and his ideas known to as many Americans as possible.
Wilson called his program the New Freedom. One of his campaign promises was to fight for better conditions for America's small business owners. Such proposals helped him win the Democratic nomination for president. Then he defeated President William Howard Taft and former President Theodore Roosevelt in the election. Woodrow Wilson, the former president of a university, had become the president of a nation. The largest crowd in Washington, D.C.'s history welcomed Wilson outside the Capitol building on the day of his inauguration. He called on the American people to join him in making the country a better place. Our duty, Wilson said, is to correct the evil without hurting the good. I call all honest men, all patriotic, all forward-looking men to my side.
Wilson wasted no time. He immediately called a special session of Congress to act on Democratic campaign promises to reduce import taxes or tariffs. Wilson felt strongly about the need to reform these taxes. He broke tradition by leaving the White House to appear before Congress in person to appeal for his tariff proposals. Many members of Congress opposed Wilson's plans, but the new president used the results of a Senate investigation to win the fight. The investigation showed that a number of senators owned companies that depended on high tariffs for their profits. The votes of these senators were influenced by their property holdings. Public knowledge of the situation forced many of them to give up their holdings and stop resisting tariff reform. Congress finally approved Wilson's proposals.
Lower tariffs reduced the amount of money taken in by the federal government. So the Senate also approved a tax on income or earnings. A constitutional amendment had been passed earlier to permit such a tax. President Wilson and the Democratic Party were pleased with the new tariff and income tax bills, but they were far from finished. Next, they turned their efforts to reform of the banking industry. For several years, many people had recognized the need for changes in the banking system. The old system of uncontrolled private banks had developed years earlier, before the United States became a major industrial nation. Many people agreed that a more modern system was needed, but they could not agree on details.
President Wilson said control of the nation's wealth was held by too few men. He noted a report that said just two men controlled 10% of the total wealth of the United States. Wilson said the nation needed a money supply that could be increased or reduced when necessary to correct economic conditions. He said a method was needed to let banks help each other during economic emergencies. And, he said, laws were needed to prevent a few wealthy men from using the economic resources of the country for their own purposes. Finally, Wilson said the control of this system of banking must be public, not private. It must belong to the government itself.
Wilson called his proposal for a central bank the Federal Reserve System. Under the plan, the nation would be divided into 12 areas. Each area would have its own Federal Reserve Bank. These area banks would not do business with the public. They would serve only as bankers' banks, and they would issue a new form of money supported by the federal government. Most important, the leaders of the new system would be chosen by the government, not by private business.
Bankers, business leaders, and their representatives in Congress sharply criticized President Wilson's proposals. They said government control of the banking system was socialism, not capitalism. But Wilson refused to change his proposals, and he helped to lead the fight to make them law. Finally, Congress agreed. It did not take long for bankers to discover that the new system was much better than the old one. Today, the Federal Reserve System is one of the most important institutions in the United States.
For Woodrow Wilson, the fight over the banking system was yet another political success. He had won major reforms in the nation's tariffs, taxes, and banking systems. Now, he told Congress, that new legislation was needed to control the power of monopolies and trusts. These were the giant companies and business alliances that controlled complete industries. Wilson proposed a new antitrust law to control the actions of large companies. His supporters in Congress wrote a bill that listed a number of business activities that no longer would be permitted. For example, no longer could a company set prices that would reduce competition or create a monopoly. No longer could corporations buy stocks of competing companies. No longer could they demand that a store refuse to sell competing products. The new bill also protected labor unions from being charged with antitrust violations. It gave unions more power to organize and protect workers.
At President Wilson's request, Congress also prepared a law that set up a government agency called the Federal Trade Commission. The commission was given the job of investigating wrongdoing in business. It had the power to force companies to obey the new antitrust laws and other rules. Both the antitrust law and the Federal Trade Commission helped protect small business owners from the power of business giants. Once again, the proposals caused fierce debate. But once again, Congress finally voted to give Wilson most of what he wanted.
The early months of Wilson's term were one of the most successful times in the history of any president. The new president had won the election by promising major reforms in the economic life of the country, and he had kept that promise. The reforms were not only a victory for Woodrow Wilson, they also changed the face of American business and economics for many years to come. The income tax, for example, grew to become the federal government's main source of money.
Woodrow Wilson had taught history in the days when he was a professor at Princeton University. He knew his actions as president could influence the country for a long time. But as a historian, he also knew his own term in the White House could be changed by unexpected events. That is just what happened. Wilson campaigned for president mainly on national issues, but he soon was forced to spend more and more time on international issues. His first big problem was across the United States southern border in Mexico.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.